Welcome to the Finate edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the FNAIT community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're here in San Diego covering ASH 2024, the annual conference of the American Society of Hematology. Our guest today is Dr. James Bussell, Emeritus Professor of Pediatrics, Medicine, and Obstetrics and Gynecology at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York City. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
So our topic today is fetal and neonatal alloimmune thrombocytopenia, or FNAIT. It's a rare disease that we understand occurs in 1 to 800 to 2,000 live births. However, it's believed to be underdiagnosed. As far as you know, is that an accurate number? And how widespread is this condition both in the United States and internationally?
Those are great questions. It is underdiagnosed, especially because there's no screening for it. How frequent it is not 1,000% clear. I would have said if you had asked me somewhere between 1 in 1,000 and 1 or 3 to 5,000, a big factor in answering that is how severe does it have to be to, quote, count as the disease? And that depends on the fetus and the neonate and their platelet counts. It is a worldwide disease, but it's different in different populations. It's been best described in the Northern European populations and the United States, where a platelet antigen called HPA1A, human platelet antigen 1, with A being the more frequent allele, is the one that is the incompatible one and causes the disease in most people. In, for example, China and Japan, that polymorphism of HPA1A or 1B really, to all intents and purposes, doesn't exist. So it appears to be less frequent there, and the antigens involved are different, but it's been even less well studied there than it has been in the US and Europe.
So there's no real estimate of how widespread it is, how many patients?
It is widespread. There have been studies from China, from Japan, from South America, from pretty much everywhere that I'm aware of, maybe less in Africa. So it is widespread, but how frequent it is could vary. Which antigen is involved could vary. And depending on the antigen, may have a lot to do with what the effects of the disease are.
So maybe we should back up a bit, and if you could explain for our listeners, what exactly is FNAIT? And let me just add that we have done stories on hemolytic disease of the fetus and newborn, which I guess is somewhat related.
No, that's a great point. Just to back up on hemolytic disease of the fetus and newborn, that affected 1 to 1.5% of all babies in the United States in the 1950s before screening, diagnosis, and prophylaxis were instituted. That disease is where the mother does not have D, most common form. She does not have D. She makes an antibody to D, which the fetus inherits from the father, and the fetus gets anemic as a result of that antibody. Has to be an IgG antibody because that's the only type of antibody that goes across the placenta. In this case, in FNAIT, the platelet antigen is inherited from the father. The mother doesn't have it, and she makes antibody to it. Most commonly, that would be she is HPA1BB. Her husband gives an HPA1A to the fetus. The mother becomes sensitized to it, makes antibodies, the IgG goes across the placenta and attacks the fetus and makes the fetus thrombocytopenic or having very low platelets.
So just so I understand, this is not a matter of the mother and the fetus having different blood types.
No, it is a matter of the mother and the fetus having different blood types. And the way they can have different blood types is that the fetus inherits the platelet blood type as opposed to the red cell blood type from the father, and that's why it's different from the mother. And during pregnancy, it is now well known that there often are small bleedings from the fetus to the mother, and that's the way we believe, although we're not sure, that the mother makes antibodies to the platelet antigen, as we've discussed, HPA1A.
The investigational therapy, which is the focus of your presentation, nipocalimab, is also a therapy for HDFN.
Yes. So Let me back up just for 1 minute on this. Diagnosis involves at the moment, if since there's no screening, recognizing that the newborn has bleeding symptoms, getting a blood count, discovering that the newborn is surprisingly thrombocytopenic, meaning they have a very low platelet count, and that's what's leading to the bleeding signs. And then the diagnosis can be made with testing. That's a little like locking the barn door after the horse has escaped because the newborn's already been born. But if the mother has another pregnancy, that's where, at the moment, all these treatments come in, which are given to increase the fetal platelet count and prevent hemorrhage. In the first case, where we don't know anything until after delivery, as many as 10 to 20% of the fetuses will have had a bleed in the brain, an intracranial hemorrhage that would be like a stroke in an adult, and they will have severe brain damage in many cases or even die. So we would like to know ahead of time, but we know it's even worse in the second pregnancy. So over the years, much of my career has been devoted to coming up with a treatment that you give to the mother during pregnancy so that the fetal's platelet count is not so low, so the fetus doesn't have a bleed and everything works out well in the long term. Previously, we had used something called intravenous gamma globulin, to which we believe you also should add steroids. And that was a very effective therapy, but it's very hard on the mothers. And like anything else, it's not perfect. Nipocalimab is specifically aimed at blocking the mother's IgG from going across the placenta by blocking the transport mechanism called FcRn that takes maternal IgG into the fetus. So in these diseases, HDFN and FNAIT, if you prevent the mother's IgG from getting to the fetus, you pretty much prevent the mother's antibody from making the fetal blood cell low, whether it's a red cell or a platelet, and thus that part of the disease is spared.
And does that also spare future children?
If a pregnancy is known that the fetus will be affected, then this treatment can be used again in future pregnancies. It's not in any way, shape, or form curative. In the HDFN study that was alluded to, it was astonishingly effective in 7 out of 13 cases. This was published in the New England Journal in August of this year, 2024. So in 7, it was great. Unfortunately, in 6, it wasn't quite as great, where they still needed in utero red cell transfusions, but at least the start of those was delayed. And we and others are working to understand what was the difference in those cases, because we had thought that the relatively high dose of nipocalimab given, as is going to be given in the FNAIT trials that the poster was about, that that would be enough to virtually 100% prevent transport of maternal IgG. But for some reason, it wasn't perfect in 6 of the cases.
I understand. Could you talk just a bit about this free CO3 trial, which I understand it's the whole point is to assess the efficacy and safety of nipocalimab in these at-risk pregnancies. Where is it taking place? How many patients are involved? And when do you expect to wrap this up?
As we mentioned, there's preliminary data so far in 13 cases of HDFN. And as I mentioned, the results were so outstanding that the community and Janssen wanted to go forward with a study in FNAIT. They're also doing studies in HDFN. And the study Frisia 3 is in the United States because I believe there is a separate study ongoing in Europe. The study here compares the anti-FcRn antibody nipocalimab that was used in the HDFN trial. It compares it to IV gamma globulin and steroids as the standard of care arm because those, as I mentioned, have been developed and work pretty well in FNAIT. So there will be 4 cases of FNAIT treated with nipocalimab for 1 treated with IVIG with or without steroids. The main entry criteria in the beginning, the 2 main ones are to have FNAIT and to have it be demonstrated to be either incompatibility of HPA-1A or incompatibility of HPA-5B. And since there's a thought that HPA-5B is not as severe as HPA-1A in general, those cases will be stratified and randomized separately. But they have to have proven FNAIT by the antibody and antigen testing. They have to have an affected fetus by cell-free fetal DNA, meaning you can determine the fetus's platelet type by taking a little blood from the mom. And they have to not have had an intracranial hemorrhage in the previous pregnancy. In this study, since, as I mentioned, we don't know that when this is going to occur until an affected baby is born, essentially all the mothers, maybe not 100%, but 95 plus percent, will have had a previous affected sibling, so there will be a history that's known. For now, at least in the beginning, that sibling cannot have had an intracranial hemorrhage, because since this is an exploratory initial trial, they want to be sure that there's much less likelihood of an intracranial hemorrhage occurring in the fetus.
So this is not placebo-controlled?
It is not placebo-controlled. This is nipocalimab versus standard of care, IVIG and steroids.
Right. And where is the trial taking place?
Trial is taking place across the United States, and they have recruited a number of sites to participate in this trial.
We're just about out of time. Last question, if I may. What is the significance of this trial, and what can we expect in the future in terms of efficacy if you find that this is the drug that you need?
What we could expect is a much easier and hopefully better way to treat mothers who were affected with the disease. This is given weekly over a half hour, let's call it sub-Q. Thus far, it appears to have side effects limited only to the fact that it reduces IgG levels in the fetus and thus the newborn and in the mom, but there have not been serious infections thus far. What I think we have to hope for in the future is that there is screening of all pregnancies, so we would know before the first case is affected, and that prophylaxis could be given. And Janssen has helped to participate in such a study that's ongoing now. So what would happen in the future if that works is this would be the treatment for cases of other antigens that were involved and for cases in which, despite screening and or prophylaxis or screening is missed, there is an affected case. And this would be an optimal treatment going forward.
Wonderful. We've been speaking with Dr. James Bussell of Weill Cornell Medicine in New York City. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor. Thank you.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.